Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti, and with me is Peter Holler, Switzerland in Sound's political correspondent and commentator. Peter, since the last time we spoke, and we have to recall that the Swiss franc has been up and up and up and up and up against major currencies, the dollar, the euro, the pound sterling fell like stones against the Swiss franc. This unleashed a crisis in the tourism industry, of course, the key export industry. When we last spoke, we basically said that the federal government really wasn't doing very much. And now, in the meantime, the Swiss National Bank has intervened in a big way, almost bigger than life, almost melodramatically, to try to stabilize the Swiss franc. As we speak, Peter, would you please bring us up to date?
Yes, if we go back a few years, the Swiss franc and the euro were around about 1 to 1.5. That is, 1 euro was worth 1.5 Swiss francs. At one point, about 2 years ago, it went up to almost 1.7 Swiss francs for a euro, which was expensive for Swiss tourists going abroad. In the interim time, since the financial crisis and the euro economic problems, it almost reached parity a few weeks ago, 1 to 1. And of course, that meant that Swiss export industry could practically not export anything because Swiss goods were far too expensive. And really, you could say that the first two attempts to get the Swiss franc down a bit failed, and the National Bank basically took out the atom bomb at the beginning of the month and said that they wouldn't allow the Swiss franc to drop below 1.2. In other words, 1 euro was worth 1.2 Swiss francs, and the Swiss National Bank would buy up euros to keep that rate more or less even. Since then, it's been kept more or less even, and Swiss industry and commerce is breathing a sigh of relief, but there are many who are worried that this could basically lead to inflation in a few years' time in Switzerland because there are so many Swiss francs floating around the world.
Let's move on, Peter. The Swiss foreign minister and current president of the Swiss Confederation, Michel Cameret of the Canton and Republic of Geneva, has announced she will not stand for re-election coming up on the 14th of December. In other words, she wants to retire from the Federal Council and from high politics. What do you think of her time in office?
Well, I mean, she's now 66, and being a member of the Social Democratic Party, Micheline Cameret couldn't extend her stay because the Social Democrats are against raising the age of retirement for women, so she had to fall in line with that. She has been foreign minister for, what, nine years when she goes. I think it's extremely patchy. I mean, for some reason, she was popular among the people, and I would say very unpopular amongst her diplomats, because she embraced a policy called active neutrality, which is a bit like inactive momentum in its logic. If you're neutral, you're not active. But she wanted to be more active than most of the Swiss foreign ministers in the past years. And she was always sort of doing provocative things, like she went to Iran and met the president wearing a headscarf. She, for instance, launched an initiative for peace in the Middle East called the Geneva Initiative, which should have brought peace between Palestine and Israel, and I think can fairly be called a total flop, if not even an embarrassment to the countries who are actually trying to find peace in the Middle East, not least the USA. I don't think she was very successful, but in Parliament she was certainly not popular, because the last time she was re-elected, she really barely got in because of her performance, for instance, over Libya, and Colonel Gaddafi, when two Swiss were taken hostage there, for instance.
Let me borrow from a German-Swiss vernacular. I always had the impression that she was rather naive and blue-eyed.
Yes, I think certainly. I mean, she in end effect, she was naive and blue-eyed, but the motivation for it, I think, was really a sort of pretty large ego trip.
Maybe she meant well, but somehow, as you say, it didn't come over very well among many factions of Parliament. Okay, we have to wait a lot of time to go before the 14th of December. We have general elections coming up at the end of October, and an awful lot has happened. I mean, by world and certainly Swiss standards, this is not business as usual. And a lot has happened in recent weeks now as we speak, recent days. How are the parties stacking up in terms of their relative strength?
If you look at the figures for the beginning of the year, you had the largest party, the Swiss People's Party, had around 28-29% of the vote in the last elections. The Social Democrats are down to around 20 or 19. The Christian Democrats are around 14 or 13.5, and the Radicals and Liberals are around 14.5. And the Greens are the only real surprise, because they have a projected part of the vote supposed to be around 10% next time at the end of October. Now, these, of course, projections, but basically they show that the People's Party will again be the biggest party by far, and the Social Democrats are very much in the doldrums, because at one time, a few years back, they had 25 or 26% of the vote. And if the elections were tomorrow, they would probably only have 19%. But the other thing that is interesting is the figures of 10% for the Greens were based on the so-called Fukushima effect after the disaster in Japan with the atomic power station. You could really say, though, that effect has dissipated in 6 months. It's now exactly 6 months, or more or less 6 months, since the Japanese disaster. And basically, the Greens have lost all that momentum which the nuclear disaster gave them.
Okay, we have a lot coming up here, and well, we just have to wait for developments, and developments these days seem to be rather quick in coming. Peter Holler, Switzerland in Sound's political commentator and analyst, thank you very much indeed. Well, it's already October, and we're forced to turn to that weather-beaten cliché, where, oh, where did the time go? The clichés arise when no one can think of a better way of putting something. And apropos weather, I just had a look at my letter from Switzerland of September 2010. With a couple of small adaptations, it pretty well describes the non-summer of 2011 as well. Just as last year, we had the fireplace going last night to take the edge off the chill in the house. The dog and I had our usual morning walk in the woods just before. And right now, it's bright and sunny with a clear blue sky and the promise of warmer temperatures this afternoon. We've had a fair amount of rain in the past few days and a weakening, but still strong sun produces early morning fog and mist, as the surface water evaporates. Of course, autumn is a classic time of change. The mountains tend to stand out especially clearly, and they look closer for some reason. You can see the high Alps of the Bernese Oberland from here, and in recent days they've become white with new snow. In fact, even a few of the mountain passes are already snow-covered as well. But this year, not only the weather is changing in Switzerland, I feel something else in the air. The New Agers have been predicting the arrival of the Age of Aquarius, or some other major social or spiritual change, for decades now. Many people are looking to December 21st, 2012, as the magic date. Some think there may be a huge, possibly even catastrophic eruption on the sun, while others go so far as to predict it will be the end of the world. The only thing that's clear is that that date marks the end of the Mayan calendar. Beyond that, what's really going to happen on December 21st, 2012, is a matter of speculation. Be that as it may, I do feel change in the air. First of all, the world is in the midst of the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. We find once great nations at the brink of bankruptcy. The once almighty U.S. dollar has lost so much ground that there are serious questions about its future as the world currency. And here in Switzerland, the pillars of private Swiss banking, the UBS and Credit Suisse, are in the headlines as the targets of the American tax and banking authorities for allegedly assisting in tax evasion by U.S. citizens, or in the case of the UBS, for a whopping $2.3 billion loss in equity trading in what is nothing less than a scandal. One way or the other, all of this has to do directly or indirectly with greed, or to use the more theological term, avarice. On October 23rd, there will be general elections in Switzerland. This time, they seem to have taken on more importance than usual. The main reason is probably just because of the current economic uncertainty. Another reason is what seems to me to be a growing maturity on the part of the Swiss electorate. Years ago, there was a lot of cynicism in Swiss politics. The people were happy with the status quo, and political figures were rarely scrutinized or subjected to pointed public debates. But this seems to have changed, and changed for the better, in my opinion. Just yesterday, I heard ordinary people being interviewed about the issues and the position of the parties. It was refreshing to hear some critical talk for a change. One political scientist and academic demanded more transparency in campaign funding, which is not controlled in this country. Someone else spoke critically about what he implied were the inadequate qualifications of some of the candidates, while another voter complained that elected politicians were interested in their own interests and those of their parties, and should be made more accountable. In short, it seems that Swiss voters are angry about the status quo and how it came about. They seem to want changes in the system. A Swiss parliamentarian once told me, quite cynically, off the record, that voters are not stupid. Not at all. In reality, they're more stupid than you think. I think we may be seeing an end to that era in Swiss political culture. In future, elected politicians will have to do more to earn their keep. Call it karma, a new age of enlightenment, or the age of Aquarius. Perhaps I'm just naive, but I do feel change in the air, and it's not just the weather. We're in Interlaken, the famous resort in the Bernese Oberland, not far from the Swiss federal capital, Bern. We have the mountains, the Eiger, Mönch, and the Jungfrau, those famous mountains in plain sight of us here in Interlaken. But we're not in Interlaken to look at the mountains today. We're in Interlaken to talk about a very Swiss phenomenon. It's the phenomenon of the Swiss postal bus or Swiss postal coach, if you prefer that term. And we're in Interlaken because we're speaking today with Bruno Hugler, who's the national manager of the Swiss Postal Bus Network Tourism. Now, first of all, before we go anywhere else, Mr. Hugler, I'd like to find out a little bit about the history of the Swiss Postal Bus. I think the name gives it away. Originally, they were conceived to carry mail. Is that correct?
That's correct. In fact, the history goes back to 1849, when the first horse-drawn postal coaches drove over the Swiss passes, or the Gotthard Pass, the famous one in Switzerland, and it changed in 1906 to motorized coaches.
You have the mail which is being carried, you have passengers which are being carried, and sometimes even light merchandise or freight, this too.
It became quite seldom now, but it's true that in the past we were really transporting everything, almost everything, yeah.
It's very funny when people hear of a post office, they normally think of an operation which is running on a deficit. But if I'm correctly informed, the Swiss postal bus system actually makes a profit.
Yeah, that makes a very little profit.
It's better than the loss, right?
It's better than the loss, of course, yeah.
And it's very popular. Everywhere you go in Switzerland, you'll see the characteristic yellow postal buses. And also, you have different models and different types of buses, different size, but there is sort of a standard size. It's a beautiful bus. A very clean inside, very comfortable, well-maintained, and a new feature that has come on recently. I just saw it in central Switzerland on the weekend when I was above the Lake of Lucerne going up to Salisberg. You get every station announced acoustically, and you even see on the sign where you are, so it's impossible to make a mistake and not get off of the right place.
Yeah. Of course, that's very, very important for all our clients and also for foreign tourists.
The other important thing is that the Swiss Postal Bus Network is actually integrated, fully integrated, in the Swiss public transit system. There are the trains, of course, the federal and private railways. And then there are steamships, and then, of course, the Swiss postal buses. And what's really interesting is that the schedules are synchronized, so you just get on and off, and you don't have to wait for very long.
We are a part of the Swiss travel system, so it means that with a Swiss pass, with a Swiss card, that's the ticket for Switzerland, the ticket to Switzerland, you can use all our bus lines. And as you mentioned already, normally where the railway ends, there's still a bus going on, bring you at the very end of each valley in Switzerland. And we say also with the postal buses, you're able to get closer to the inhabitants of Switzerland, you get closer to the nature, to the mountains. A lot of people prefer the bus. You mentioned before now all the stops are announced, it's also written, and it's no problem for English-speaking people to go around. And I think beside our four languages in Switzerland, almost everybody speaks also English.
So the drivers know the basics to get you around.
They know the basics, yeah, to give the information. And as they are local, they also know a lot about the area, and they are very willing to give you some information if you ask them.
And they're very friendly. I want to tell you this anecdote. I mentioned being in Salisburg in central Switzerland just over the weekend. It's Monday as we're recording this. And I was preoccupied. My mind was somewhere else. And I got off the postal bus. I had my knapsack on. And I forgot that I had a piece of baggage there, luggage, in the bus. I went to the train station. It beautifully synchronized. 5 minutes later, there was to be a train to take me to Lucerne and then on to the Bern area. And I just wasn't thinking. And suddenly, something hit me on the platform in the station. I forgot my bag. And I turn around, and there's the driver came right to the platform and said, somebody left this bag on the bus. So that's the kind of service you get, too.
That's the kind of service, and I'm very happy that you discovered that service. I mean, they are very friendly, they're very helpful. That's what we teach them also. And we focus a lot on quality, on high quality, and to really make a round trip by postal bus as an unforgettable experience.
Well, I have another anecdote, too. On the way down, and this is a twisting mountain road from Salisberg down to Buchs on the Lake of Lucerne, the incalculable happened. Two buses, the postal bus and another large tourist bus, came together at the same in a curve. Now, this is probably any bus driver's nightmare, but these guys are so well trained. He was cool. The whole thing was sorted out in 2 minutes, and he navigated his way around these two bus drivers. I don't know how they did it. They had radar or something, but they just are so experienced. They are really well trained, aren't they?
They are very well trained. I mean, also all our bus drivers, they are used to drive on our narrow streets in Switzerland, also over the passes. And that's of our main topics, the post-bus lines in the Central Alps, to drive over those passes, to have to pass by another coach maybe, whose driver is not so experienced as ours are maybe.
As far as the ticket possibilities are concerned, you mentioned the Swiss Pass before. This is offered by the Swiss Federal Railways, and you're included in that. You're part of that, right? As well as the steamships, I believe.
Yes, we are a part of this system. You can buy a Swiss Pass, for instance. That's a ticket that allows to travel all over Switzerland for a couple of days. It's up on you to choose between 7, 14, 21 days, and all the trains are included, all the postal buses and also the steamers.
And I believe even trams and city buses, is that correct?
About 30 city buses and trams are also included.
It's the only ticket you need here.
It's the only ticket you need.
Well, the Swiss Postal Bus Network reminds me very much, or the public transport system in this country reminds me a lot of the veins and arteries and capillaries that we have in our body. You have the main arteries carrying the mainstream. This would be the rail. And then, of course, when you get into the more extremities, the outback, in other words, in every hamlet, in every mountain village, you have a postal bus serving them. There's nowhere you cannot get to in this country by bus. You're 100% coverage, practically.
We can say that in Switzerland you're 100% covered, because at our public transportation system, I think it's one of the best in the world.
Some say the very best, and not the Swiss say that. Foreign observers say that.
That's what I heard very often. And I think Switzerland is very famous for that. We are famous for the nature. We are famous for our mountains. But you need the possibility to discover all that. And with trains, with steamers, with the postal buses, you really get it.
What would you say from a touristic point of view are probably the most popular routes that you serve?
To show you that, I would like to take you to a small itinerary that starts in the Valais region, let's say in Saas-Fee. We drive
Canton Valais.
Canton de Valais in the south. We take the postal bus up there. It's a Carrefour resort. We drive down to Brieg. And on the way up to the Simplon Pass, the driver even will tell us something about Napoleon, who crossed the Simplon Pass a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And then is the post bus in Domodossola.
That's Italy. You go all the way to Italy.
Italy. It's also to show you how cosmopolitan we are. Mm-hmm. From Domodossola in Italy, we take a very scenic railway through the Cento Valley, means 100 Valley, toward Ticino.
Ticino, yeah.
Exactly, in the southern part of Switzerland. In Lugano, we take again the postal bus. Beside, we see the palm trees, and we go straight ahead from the palm trees to the glaciers in the Graubünden area to St. Moritz. Mm. From St. Moritz, again, over the Julier Pass to Chur, of course, by postal bus. And we will continue then our ride from the Glarus to central Switzerland, to the Lake of Lucerne, from there to Andermatt. We will have a very nice ride over the passes of Gotthard, of Nuven and Furka, Grimsel.
These are all the great names, passes.
All the great passes. Mm-hmm. We will go to the Bernese Oberland, for instance, to Meiringen. We will enter into the
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes, wanted to mention it, in the Rosenlauitaal by postal bus. We will pass by the Reichenbach Falls, where Sherlock Holmes died, over the Kleine Scheidegg. We will end at the foot of Eigermönch and Jungfrau in Grindelwald. That's just an example for a round trip that we offer also to clients.
You can break this journey too anywhere, and I guess continue with it. You want to spend some time up at the top of the Gotthard Pass? Okay, stay there the night and then continue the next day, right?
That's the big advantage of that system. You can, as you mentioned, do it on your own. You take it as those bus lines are all scheduled. You stop wherever you want. You stay 2-3 overnights in the Ticino. You continue to St. Moritz. You stay one night there. So it's really up on you to put your own personal individual program together.
Travel in Switzerland made to order. So.
Exactly.
And it's very close transportation, as we said again. The rail is fantastic. It's fast to get you from point A to point B very rapidly. But if you want to see Switzerland at a slower pace, get off, get on. See the out-of-the-way places, the Swiss Postal Bus. Bruno Hugler, manager of the tourism branch of the Swiss Postal Bus System, headquartered here in Interlaken, the capital of the Bernese Oberland. Thanks very much indeed. For Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.